when you're talking about prevention, so prevention, you're thinking things that will last longer in your system. Very often, CBD, when used for medication, for conditions that you want it to have its effects all day, then people are thinking about oral administration. So probably an oil, a tincture, or edible forms. And then there's the safety concerns. So with oral and edible forms, there's the liver concerns that I brought up earlier, drug-drug interaction concerns. So discuss it with your physician. Make sure that you don't have any other medications that you're using that could have that interaction. And then thinking about the doses.
Gradually, in different parts of the world, cannabis is becoming more available for both medicinal as well as recreational use as people are getting greater access. There are a lot of questions about how to use it and what's in it, what contents work for people with migraine and what doesn't, and what do we know? What do we not know? Here with us today is Dr. Nathaniel Schuster from UC San Diego, who is one of the world's foremost leading researchers on the topic of cannabis and migraine. So Dr. Schuster, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you so much for having me to speak.
So I've been reading a lot about CBD lately and how CBD oils are great for people with chronic pain or migraine. And I'm wondering, is this legit or is this the new snake oil?
So certainly people are, over the last few years, have been treating CBD like it is, you know, the answer to everything. And unfortunately, in medicine, we don't have anything that is the answer to everything. So CBD, it needs to be researched. It's something that in our current ongoing Migraine Research Foundation funded study, we are studying CBD. We need evidence for what its effects are in acute migraine, which is what we are studying in our ongoing study. We also need research on what it does for migraine prevention. But at this point, there isn't that clinical evidence to show that it is effective. Certainly for the people out there who are thinking about trying CBD, I think there's a few really important things to be aware of. First of all, that never has it been easier to see a headache specialist because so many of us have availability via telemedicine. So please do meet with somebody in your state who is a headache specialist first to be able to explore the things that are evidence-based. So that's number one. Number two, what are the risks of CBD? So probably overall pretty safe. What I tell my patients is that the biggest risk right now is to their pocketbooks. That is generally not covered by insurance and it can be expensive. Another thing is that the doses that generally are commercially available are likely much lower than what you are going to be able to probably purchase. In so much of the research that's been out there, whether for epilepsy conditions or whether for social anxiety disorder, before anxiety about public speaking, that the doses that people are using are 400 milligrams up to 750 milligrams, much higher than probably you're going to be using if you purchase from a dispensary. Other things. So there have been some concerns with using those sort of higher doses. Well, what is the effects on the liver? That clinically significant adverse liver events have not been seen so far. However, abnormalities on liver laboratory tests have been seen. So that's a concern. Another thing, because of its actions on the liver, is drug-drug interactions. So I would recommend, if you're thinking about using, especially if you're thinking about using high doses, to talk to your physician first, look at the medications that you're using and make sure that there aren't drug-drug interactions there.
That's great, but let's take a step back. There is a long history of cannabis being used in medicine. Can you just walk us through a little bit of the human history with cannabis? And would you use the term cannabis or marijuana? How do you differentiate when you use which term?
I do use the term cannabis. I think it sounds more scientific, more medical. I think marijuana has a lot of stigma related to it. It's considered to be a recreational drug, as it has been in the US. However, the history of it being a medicine, well, this goes back to 2900 BC in China, 1000 BC in India, and Its use medically for migraine has been documented between 1843 and 1943 in Europe and North America. And people were saying that it was effective both for migraine prevention and acute migraine treatment. And so Sir William Osler, in his 1916 textbook, he said that cannabis was probably the most satisfactory remedy for migraine. Now, fortunately, it's not 1916 anymore. We have so many evidence-based FDA-approved treatments for migraine. So I certainly, what I do in my treatment of patients is I certainly point them towards those FDA-approved treatments and other evidence-based treatments. And for my patients, I tell them, let's see how cannabis works in the context of a clinical trial. And I'm not on a routine basis recommending to patients to use cannabis as a migraine treatment. That said, we know that probably around 35% of the medical cannabis use is actually for people with migraine and other headache disorders. So a lot of people out there are self-treating with cannabis. However, as I said earlier, I really encourage patients or really the many people out there who are treating themselves for migraine with over-the-counter treatments, which nowadays does include cannabis in many states, to talk to their physicians about other things that are covered by insurance before they are spending their own money on cannabis products, which of course can be expensive.
And you said in history, there was this period when cannabis was being used and it was like the mid-1800s or the mid-1900s. What changed in the US and globally that really seemed like it started to restrict access to cannabis in ways that had not been so in the 100 years or thousands of years before that?
Yeah, so of course it became a Schedule I drug. Limitations around it being commercially available, the stigma around its use as a recreational drug. Fortunately, in the ensuing years, we also now have so many treatments that do not have what I consider to be a side effect and a side effect that we want to avoid, which is that people can get high from it. What we found in treating patients with chronic pain conditions that really have more evidence for the use of cannabis, that very often lower doses than people are using recreationally can be helpful for chronic pain conditions. And so that's certainly what I recommend for patients with chronic pain conditions that we have more evidence. So things like neuropathic pain, multiple sclerosis, to use it at doses that are not going to get them high.
Got it. Now let's talk about stigma. What do you see as the stigma associated with cannabis?
Yeah, so of course, in some states more than others, in some locations more than others, there can be more stigma than in other places and in different communities. But certainly overall, there is still a stigma. Even here in San Diego, many, many people are using cannabis for different medical uses, whether with the advice of a doctor or without the advice of a doctor. People are using it, but other people, if you mention it to them, they're like, completely not open to it because it was a recreational drug. People associate it with addiction and it's not something that a lot of patients are interested in. There's law enforcement concerns. You know, a lot of people are concerned about that as well in some jurisdictions more than others. So the stigma, I think it's less. I think it's still there. I think it varies between locations as well as within locations. So why is it there? Well, it is a Schedule I drug at this time. So that very well could change at some point. I certainly think that as the medical evidence advances, that hopefully the stigma amongst doctors, I think a lot of patients are afraid to bring up cannabis to their doctor because they don't know how their doctor will respond, how it might affect their treatment. As the evidence builds, hopefully there will be less stigma amongst physicians. Physicians will become more used to talking about it with their patients. They'll become more educated about how to counsel their patients. And hopefully patients will become more open with discussing it with their physician.
Excellent. So let's focus on what is cannabis and where does it come from? What exactly is in it?
Yeah, so cannabis, of course, it is a plant. And so what you'll hear about are phytocannabinoids. So that's phyto means from plants. Then there's endocannabinoids, which is what we have naturally in us. The reason why humans have a response to cannabis is because we have an endocannabinoid system. We have a natural endocannabinoid, anandamide, which is in our body. And we have these receptors, CB1 and CB2 receptors, that anandamide acts upon. And so what we have in the cannabis plant in phytocannabinoids, well, there's THC, delta-9, tetrahydrocannabinol, and then there's CBD, cannabidiol, and there's other things as well. There's minor cannabinoids, terpenes, flavonoids. So different things that are biologically active within cannabis. And so how do these act? Many different potential likely mechanisms. So the CB1 receptor, it's located in many areas within the central nervous system, which means the brain and the spinal cord. It's located in the peripheral nervous system, so in our nerves, and effects on the CB1 receptor can have effects on pain transmission. There's also some research that there's other areas of the brain involved with migraine pathogenesis that THC in preclinical studies appears to be active upon. There's some research that demonstrates that it can have an effect on cortical spreading depression, which is the biological underpinning of what patients can experience as migraine aura. And many of the medications that we use in migraine, that they have an effect on cortical spreading depression. And there is one study that demonstrated that THC may as well. There's also other areas of the brain. I don't want to go into the nitty-gritty too much, but some wonderful research done by Simon Ackerman and his colleagues looking at different mechanisms by which anandamide or THC might be effective for migraine treatment. CBD, there's been less preclinical evidence on it, but there are some hypothesized mechanisms by which it might be effective, whether it is by its effect of as being an anti-inflammatory, its effects on anandamide, which can be by inhibiting its reuptake or inhibiting its degradation, it being broken down, by its effects on anxiety and sleep, by its effects on THC. So different mechanisms by which it might be effective.
Okay. So THC is the part where we have the most knowledge. It's been the most studied and it's the most understood part of cannabis. What is the THC and what are those psychological or psychoactive effects of THC?
So these are side effects that we want patients who are being treated for different medical conditions to hopefully be able to avoid. And what are the ways that we can avoid it? Well, maybe by starting first with CBD, which does not have these side effects. Other ways to hopefully avoid them by using low doses of THC. So starting low, sometimes if you're using, for example, an oil with a single drop with 1 milligram of THC and a high ratio of CBD. So maybe 20-1 in favor of CBD, if you're able to find that, to be able to modulate the side effects, because the idea is that with CBD, that hopefully people will have less side effects than they have with THC alone, and then gradually increasing for those people who are naive to THC, that hopefully they'll be able to tolerate that and have less of the side effects while still hopefully getting whether it's the pain benefits or other medical benefits that people are looking for from cannabinoids.
So when you have migraine and you think, maybe I'll try cannabis to help with that. Some of the common effects of migraine are brain fog and difficulties with memory for some people. And if you're taking something that can compound those, while it might be working positively in other ways, that's really going to work against you. And for many people, again, that's already a struggle just working through the brain fog associated with migraine.
Yeah, so our goal from acute or abortive treatments for migraine is we want to get you doing better as quickly as possible and being able to get back to regular activities and having that migraine not only be gone, hopefully looking at 1 hour and 2 hours, we want it to be gone. We also don't want it to come back over 24 hours and 48 hours. And these are things that every research study on acute migraine that's been FDA approved in recent years, fortunately, we've had a few of them, has studied. And this is the stuff that we are looking at as well in our ongoing study. So hopefully we will have some answers as to whether THC, CBD, the combination of the two are able to get a migraine gone and keep it away with the minimum amount of side effects. And hopefully those will be gone as soon as possible. Many people who have used triptans and other acute migraine treatments over time have also reported some of these side effects, but the people who keep on using them long-term, it's because that those side effects hopefully are going to be gone sooner than other things and help them to get back into the game earlier rather than later. Those are the people who keep on using triptans. And I imagine that if these are shown to be effective treatments, that likewise, the people who are going to say, oh, I'm going to keep on using this as an acute or abortive treatment are the ones for whom the side effects, they're gone in an hour or 2 hours, and they're hopefully back in the game, being able to resume their usual activities, whether it's at school, at work, around the house, because that's really our goal with acute migraine treatments.
That's right. People want to get back in the game. Now, cannabis comes in many different forms. Can you tell us what are they and what do you see as the strains that people are most commonly using?
So historically, people used to talk about, and some people still talk about, indica, sativa, hybrid. And I'm coming from really a migraine perspective coming to this. So the people who I've collaborated with, who I've learned from, who are the cannabis experts, they say that these are really outdated, that the way that we should be talking about cannabinoids nowadays, the different chemotypes are whether it's THC predominant, whether it's CBD predominant, and different mixtures of the two. So the ratios are important to be aware of and to think about. Some people will use one-to-one ratios of THC, CBD, and that's very often people who have prior experience with it and they tolerate it well, that they might use that as a treatment, whether it's for, as I said, in the practice that I have, it's more often for more evidence-based pain disorders than for migraine at this time. For when it comes to CBD, a lot of people for chronic pain conditions are using different forms of CBD by itself without any THC. And then for some people for whom that doesn't do the trick, what we very often will recommend is start with a high ratio, high CBD, low THC, and gradually increase from that low starting dose. So different forms in which it comes. Well, in general, for things like neuropathic pain that might be there all the time in people's lives, you might think about using something that is longer acting, but it might take longer to kick in. For example, gummies and edibles, those take longer to kick in, but then they last longer.
So if you're digesting it, the digestion process is slower than the inhalation process.
Right, exactly. So then you have things like vaporization or smoking, which acts quickly. Something else that acts quickly is sublingual administration, where people put it underneath their tongue, and then it gets absorbed in a way that actually bypasses going through the liver and hopefully has the effects in the places that affect pain, including, well, the brain, spinal cord, nervous system.
Got it. Now let's talk about hemp. I hear people discussing this. What is hemp and how does it differ from marijuana or cannabis?
So when people are talking about hemp, legally, what makes something hemp is if it has less than 0.3% of THC. So it is CBD predominant. So when people are talking about hemp, They're talking about using CBD without THC. And there's many different products, many different CBD products that can be topical administration. So people can put it on a painful knee. There's vaporization. And I should take a moment to talk about the safety concerns about vaporization. There's sublingual administration, there's edibles. So similar to THC. So concerns about oils and waxes for vaporization is that there have been cases of people having lung injury. And it's believed to be related to things that are not applicable to if you're using flowers. So if you are vaporizing or smoking the plant matter itself, doesn't seem to have been associated with these lung injury events the way that vaporizing oils and waxes have been. So a problem with it being not as regulated as hopefully it will be one day is that sometimes there can be contaminants. One of the theories is that there's been vitamin E in some of them, and vitamin E is not supposed to be inhaled, that could be one of the reasons for lung injury. So in my practice, we are not recommending people vaporize waxes and oils. We are really cautioning against that. And we are recommending vaporizing flower, so plant product. And in our research study, the Migraine Research Foundation funded clinical trial that we're doing, we are having our patients vaporizing flower from the federal government, from the U.S. federal government, grown at University of Mississippi, similar to so much of the clinical research that's been done over time at UCSD, as well as other places. And with that, nobody has had this lung injury that's been seen with waxes and oils.
So Dr. Schuster, can you talk us through the approach? If someone is going to start taking cannabis or testing it out, what's the best approach?
Yeah, so some research that was done at UCSD has actually shown that lower doses might actually be more effective for pain treatment than higher doses. And so while this research hasn't yet been done, looking at migraine, certainly it needs to be done, that I think it is a very reasonable approach if you're thinking about using for migraine to start low, go slow, and that less might be more. Really important, less lower doses might actually be more effective. Higher doses might be what we call hyperalgesic. They might actually increase pain. This has been shown in human research. So I certainly recommend starting at a low dose, seeing whether that's effective before going up to the higher doses. The recreational doses very well might be higher than you need to have medicinal benefits.
And I assume that's more on the THC side than the CBD side. How do people get the right balance of THC and CBD?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. Exactly. That with THC research that's been done in humans, that THC can be hyperalgesic, which means having increased pain at higher doses, that low doses will have hopefully less of the psychoactive side effects. Side effects we want to avoid here. Some of, you know, what I don't want patients to do is think, and this is what we hear about when people end up in the emergency room, is sometimes they don't feel high. And this is, you know, stereotypically in people using recreationally, especially with edible routes, is they take some, they don't have effects after 45 minutes, they think, I must not have taken enough. So then they take more and they get dysphoric. They have paranoia, side effects. You hear stories from emergency room colleagues about people coming into the hospital saying that they think that they're going to die. So especially people who are not used to using cannabis sometimes take too much, especially with edible, they can get very they can become paranoid from it. You want to avoid that. Start with a low dose, and starting with a high CBD low THC product. So for example, a 20-to-1 ratio of CBD to THC.
Now let's talk about your study. How long did it take? I understand that it's really difficult to do research on a schedule, on a Schedule I drug. How long did it take to get to the point that you were actually able to do this study?
Yeah, so from the time that we started on the research grant through getting the federal, state, and local approvals, and of course, COVID also sort of was in there pushing things off by a little bit as well, probably about 21 months passed. Thankfully, recruitment's been going wonderful, and we still have well over a year before we will be unblinded. I have no idea what the results are, but very excited myself to find out what our results are and to share with all of you.
And so talk us through the different groups of this study. What are you comparing?
This is a crossover study. So what that means is that every patient gets to use multiple treatments. So there's four different treatments. And so people are treating four separate migraine attacks, at least 1 week between each attack, which is called a washout, to make sure that they don't have any of the residual from the prior treatment still in their system. And the four different treatments are THC by itself, THC with CBD, CBD by itself, and placebo. So four different treatments. And this placebo from the federal government, they used alcohol to extract the THC and CBD. So the idea is that it should taste like the THC, THC-CBD mix and CBD, but without the psychoactive effects or without the medical effects. And so we will see hopefully whether there is a difference between these different treatments and placebo. Or whether there is not. With 90 patients, will it be a large enough study to show whether there's a difference between the three different treatments? There might not be, but this is the first study and probably will not be the last study on this question.
Okay, so how do people report the effect of what they used?
Yeah, so we have a custom-made cell phone app for this research study. So this is not an app that you're going to find on the App Store. This is just for this clinical trial. And so when somebody feels a migraine coming on, they open up the app and they ask a few, they will be asked a few questions that determine whether this migraine attack is one that we want to have them administer cannabis for. So for example, we want to make sure that this is indeed a migraine. That they're having the associated features that come with a migraine that make it more than just a headache. We want to make sure that they have not used any other treatments yet to treat that migraine. We want to make sure that it's early enough in the migraine. And so if it meets all those specific criteria, the app then will give them very specific instructions, show them a counter of how many seconds to inhale, how many seconds to hold it in their lungs, and then to exhale, and then 45 seconds to wait. And then they're going to repeat that process and they inhale four times. So this standardizes things as much as possible across patients using this process called the Fulton uniform puff process, which is widely used in cannabis research. And then it sends them messages to tell us how well the cannabis worked to treat this migraine attack at 1 hour, 2 hours, 24 hours, and 48 hours. So we get this efficacy and side effect adverse events data about each migraine attack. And of course, I am completely blinded. So, you know, the patient doesn't know which treatment is which. They come to them from a research pharmacist just saying migraine 1 through 4. And the app says migraine 1 through 4. And they might have a hint, you know, if they feel the psychoactive effects, which treatment is which. But I anticipate, especially because we have CBD in this study, which does not have the psychoactive effects, that hopefully patients will not 100% always know whether they are using say CBD or placebo especially, and hopefully all the time will not know whether they're using a THC containing product or using placebo.
And you said it'll be about a year before you have the results that you're able to share. Is that approximately the time frame?
Yeah. So every patient, I don't anticipate that's going to take our last enrolled patient or every patient a full year to treat for migraine attacks, but patients do have up to a year to treat for migraine attacks. So once we complete enrolling our target number of patients, then we have to wait for them to have all treated for migraine attacks. And then we'll be able to finally close the study, have a statistician analyze all of the data, and then we'll be ready to share the results.
Are there many other people doing research on cannabis and migraine in the US or globally?
So there is not a ton of research out there, and largely because it's very hard to do this research. The regulatory hurdles are huge. So there have been a few studies that have come out over the years. I do think that there's been a few more in the last few years than there were in the years prior to that, but it's largely retrospective studies, surveys, data collected from phone apps, but not, not prospective studies. And there's never before been a placebo-controlled, randomized controlled trial, which is the gold standard for how to demonstrate that something is effective for a medical or treatment. So, you know, certainly there is a need for more people to do this research. And I do anticipate that just as I've seen more research studies coming out in the last few years, that hopefully in the forthcoming years that there will be more people studying this. Because doctors and patients really, you know, I think want to know, is this something that's more effective than placebo? If it is, well, then we need to figure out where it fits into the treatment paradigm, whether it should be used on its own, which products, whether it should be used together with other products or whether that should be avoided, whether there's a medication overuse headache. I think that's an important question to be studied. Whether it should be used for acute use, preventive use, or both. So there's a lot of research studies that need to be done so that patients and physicians know what is the role of cannabinoids for migraine. We have so many great evidence-based treatments out there nowadays that if it doesn't work, well, patients really should probably stop using it for this purpose and absolutely, you know, reach out to headache specialists to use the many things out there that fortunately we now have available for them.
Okay, so let's take a question from our community that sort of builds on what you were just saying. Terry says she's thinking about trying CBD and is wondering, should she be using it preventively? Should she be using it acutely? Should she be using an edible or an oil? I mean, can you or do you? Do we know enough to give Terry any direction?
Yeah, so definitely CBD has not yet been studied for its effect for migraine prevention. I think it makes a lot of sense to study this because it's not intoxicating. Because like so many of the migraine medications that we've used for so many years, it has evidence for its efficacy for some seizure disorders and some other medicines have been used for seizure disorders. They then later found were also effective for migraine prevention. So definitely something that's studyable. But would I recommend it for Terry? So if you haven't seen a migraine specialist, a headache specialist already, I would certainly recommend first see a headache specialist, see whether there's you know, new FDA-approved evidence-based treatments that you haven't used yet, because those might be not only more effective, more likely to be effective for you, but might also be more affordable for you. CBD products can be expensive. And then when you're talking about prevention, so prevention, you're thinking things that will last longer in your system. Very often, CBD, when used for medication, for conditions that you want to have its effects all day, then people are thinking about oral administration, so probably an oil, a tincture, or edible forms. And then there's the safety concerns. So with oral and edible forms, there's the liver concerns that I brought up earlier, drug-drug interaction concerns. So discuss it with your physician. Make sure that you don't have any other medications that you're using that could have that interaction. And then thinking about the doses, because my suspicion is that when clinical trials are done one day, that they're going to be studying it at doses that are much higher than those that a lot of patients who are using CBD on their own, going to dispensaries, are able to obtain at an affordable price. When it comes to CBD for acute migraine treatment, my concern with that is that to make sure that you're not vaporizing, oils or waxes, because there have been those cases of acute lung injury. If you want to use CBD for an acute process, for an acute treatment, you are generally going to be thinking about using it in a way that acts quickly. So that would be inhalation or sublingual. So maybe you would want to try then the sublingual approach.
Okay. Kim from our community has tried CBD. It was not effective for her and is wondering, should she start trying THC alone or a combo product or a stronger CBD product? What would be your recommendation for Kim?
Yeah. So thanks for that great question, Kim. So once again, certainly talk to a headache specialist to make sure that you've used the things that are FDA approved, evidence-based, before going to things like, well, what are some of the options after you've tried CBD, you didn't get benefit from it? Well, one option would be higher doses of CBD. Once again, though, there are the liver safety concerns there. There's the drug-drug interaction concerns there. Another option would be going to a low dose of THC. So a high ratio CBD to THC, maybe starting with say a 20-to-1 ratio and gradually increasing that. Another option would be thinking about a different route of administration. So if you were using CBD for acute treatment, but you were using edibles that might not act quickly enough, well, thinking about sublingual or under the tongue. If you're talking about using it for acute or for preventive use, well, then an edible or oils could be maybe a better approach because it lasts longer. So these are all things that you can talk about with your headache specialist, see whether they have any recommendations about routes of administration. I certainly recommend discussing with a headache specialist rather than the person in the dispensary. People who are trying to sell you something in general, having caution, they might try to sell you additional things, more things than you need. So I certainly recommend that people discuss this with their physician and explore the things that are going to be covered by their insurance and things that are evidence-based that we know at what dose they're going to be effective before using cannabinoids.
Okay, we had a question from Miriam, who's asking about what do we know about specific strains that would be more helpful? Are there specific brands or a type of indica or sativa that would be more helpful for people with migraine?
Yeah, so I certainly do not recommend specific commercial products. I'm coming at this very much from a vantage point that things need to be studied with clinical trials. And hopefully one day some of these will be studied scientifically against placebo, and then we can make some recommendations. But until then, as you're suspecting, well, look at the THC, look at the CBD, look at the route of administration, and make, with the assistance of a physician, your decisions accordingly. When it comes to specific names, a lot of them, a lot of them have fun names, but we don't have really evidence to speak to one or another. There's been one study at all that I'm aware of that has any recommendations on it. And this was based on a survey. So it's not a clinical trial. So that's something that your physician, you know, if they choose, might find. They might have some recommendations accordingly. But for myself, I don't think that we have any level of evidence yet that warrants a physician recommendation about one product versus another.
Okay. And is there a variation in individuals, different endocannabinoid systems? It seems that some people respond to cannabis very differently than other people do. What's the cause of that variation?
Yeah, so we see this with so many migraine treatments. We don't have the blood tests yet that we can use ahead of time. There's not much research out there yet about doing genetic testing to be able to identify who's going to respond to one migraine treatment versus another. Hopefully one day we'll have these things. Until then, so many things in migraine treatment are about having that relationship with a treating doctor who gives a recommendation. You give it a try and you see whether it is something where it has side effects, in which case you're not going to want to keep on using it, or whether it's well tolerated. And if it's well tolerated, is it effective? Or is it not effective? And then hopefully you can identify those medications that are good acute medications or abortive medicines. And then for those people who warrant preventive medicines, that they have that preventive or prophylactic medicine or medicines that are effective for them. So when it comes to variations across people who have episodic migraine versus chronic migraine, there have been some differences seen on a very limited amount of research so far, that there might be differences in how their endocannabinoids are functioning. Also between people who have migraine and people who don't, there might be differences between how their endocannabinoid systems function. So I do discuss this in a paper that recently my colleague Michelle Sexton and I published in Practical Neurology. This is something that's open access available for anybody to read, but I don't think that this research is yet at a point that I would say that people who have migraine have a quote endocannabinoid deficiency, and that, you know, sort of what that leads people to potentially think is that everybody with migraine should be using cannabinoids to replete this endocannabinoid deficiency. That's certainly not something that I believe at this point. But I do look forward to one day having, you know, those less invasive tests, hopefully, so that we can tell people, oh, you're likely to respond to these migraine treatments, as compared to how we have things nowadays, which is discussing with a patient, figuring out what's the right things to start them on, and then working with them very often over the course of quite a few months and sometimes even years to identify the right migraine treatments for them.
You know, from the patient perspective, it is very frustrating when it's that trial and error approach that leads them to feel like a guinea pig, that cycle of new treatment and the hope that this is going to be the one that works. You don't know immediately and you need to give it time. And then you find you're not getting an appropriate amount of relief from it or any relief from it. You need to go back and then try something else. And certainly it would be much better for patients if science could get to the point where you're talking about, here's it based on a test, based on your genetics, we have very good reason to believe that this is where you should start your treatment.
Absolutely. And fortunately, you know, just thinking about how things are today versus how things were in the headache field a few years ago, our treatments for migraine have come leaps and bounds thanks to so much research that has been done. And so, you know, our people, you know, I hear trial and error all the time. And I don't really think, you know, the word error, it's not that it's an error. It's that you're that much closer to finding the effective treatments. And it's not that anybody's guinea pigs. These are, we have treatments that have been studied in hundreds and thousands of patients at this point. So the guinea pig phase, we're way past that with so many of these treatments. It's really cannabis where we're still in the guinea pig phase. And with so many of the treatments that are now out there, we have loads of evidence. We know that they're effective. We know that they're not effective for everybody. But, oh, for all the people out there who maybe, you know, they'd seen headache specialists maybe in the, you know, early 2010s, but they haven't seen a headache specialist in the last year or two, you know, 100% go and make an appointment, find somebody, even if it takes 3 months to get in to see a headache specialist. I think that that's well worth it, because the treatments that we have now are just much more than we had pre-pandemic even. Plus, it's much easier now to have access to a headache specialist. Historically, headache specialists were so, you know, we are more consolidated in certain geographic locations, and the world's much flatter now than it used to be, because probably all of us still have some telemedicine as part of our careers, that, you know, geography just matters less than it used to. So if you haven't seen a headache specialist since before the pandemic, please make a telemedicine visit with somebody and discuss some of the new treatments.
Let's talk about how comorbidities play into this. A little bit of cannabis acts on some other things that people with migraine have troubles with as well. For example, the gut. There are higher rates of IBS and IBD with migraine. The nausea and vomiting can make it harder to keep down certain medicines. What's the effect of cannabis on the gut and on appetite? And how does that intersect with migraine?
Yeah, so when it comes to nausea, that's one of the reasons that I'm the most optimistic about cannabis, is that it has evidence for the treatment of nausea. That said, when you talk to people who are in the gastroenterology field, when you talk to people who are gut experts, they see people who have cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. They see people where they have nausea because they use cannabis so much. So they tend to be very conservative about cannabis. They see the downsides of it. So for people who have gastroenterological disorders, discuss this with your gastroenterologist. I do not want to be making recommendations about what its effects could be on IBS or IBD or Crohn's. There are specialists in those fields that I would certainly recommend that you discuss this with.
Okay, but that's definitely an action that we know that cannabis is known to interact with the gastro system. And so the advice to people would probably be something like, discuss it with your doctor, see whether it's right for you, depending on what's going on with your gut or your gut-brain connection.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, once again, now that we are in the telemedicine era, it just makes it so much easier to have your medical, you know, avail yourself of the various specialists who might be helpful to treat you as a whole person. And so that can include gastroenterologists, psychiatrists, when it comes to mood disorders. You know, some people are very optimistic within the psychiatry field about what the uses of cannabinoids can be for mood disorders, and some people are very concerned about it. We know that just like people who are using cannabis, they use less of, say, opioids if they are somebody who has chronic pain when they start using cannabis, that people who have different psychiatric conditions, they use less of psychiatric medications. But whether that's a good thing or a bad thing depends on who you ask. So some psychiatrists are excited about cannabis. Some of them are very concerned about what could be the risks of it and whether people stop using medicines that they should really be on. So for that same reason, when I have patients who have significant psychiatric conditions and they are asking me about cannabis, I will refer them back to their psychiatrist. I will encourage them, you know, take advantage if it's hard for you to get in to see a psychiatrist. Take advantage of that telemedicine's being used even more widely amongst psychiatrists than in many other fields. When it comes to mood disorders, I think that there's the potential of making things better, making things worse, and certainly recommend that people talk to their psychiatrist.
One other thing we want to cover before we move on is sleep. What do we know about how cannabis interacts with people's sleep?
So here in San Diego, so many patients come to me having already tried cannabinoids, whether THC predominant or CBD predominant. And so I hear a lot of patients saying, oh, I found that wasn't helpful for my pain condition, or, oh, it wasn't helpful for my migraines or other headache disorder, but I found that it was helpful for sleep. So I still use it for sleep. So anecdotally, I do hear from a lot of people that it's helpful for sleep. Is it helpful for everybody? Is it something that a sleep expert would recommend? That I do not know. Certainly, I'm sure that, and I know that research studies are ongoing as to their value in sleep. Anecdotally, I hear more patients saying that's helpful for sleep than helpful for pain or for headache disorders. That said, it could be that the reason why they're coming to see me is because they're still having headache, they're still having a pain, and you know that those people who respond well to cannabinoids might be less likely to make an appointment to come and see me.
Dr. Schuster, we are so glad that you're doing this research, and these are some fascinating questions that you're working to answer with very scientific approaches that are being brought to bear to develop some clear answers for people. If someone wants to learn more about the research you're doing, where should they go?
So you can read the article that Michelle Sexton and I recently published in the journal Practical Neurology. It is available online for anybody to read. You can follow me on Twitter. I am not a big Twitter poster, but I'm sure that when the time comes to release our research, to announce our results, that I will be sharing that on Twitter. So that's a couple of ways that you can follow our research.
Fantastic. We'll put some links down below just to sum it up. What are some of the take-home messages that you really want people who are living with migraine, who are either using or thinking about using cannabis, that you really want them to have top of mind?
So first of all, as I've said a few times, is to make an appointment with a headache specialist. Make sure that you've actually used the wonderful new treatments that we have there for people with migraine before you start thinking about cannabinoids. What are the risks? Well, there are the side effects of getting high, cognitive side effects that people can have from cannabinoids, from THC products in particular. With CBD products, especially at really high doses, well, very costly, liver concerns, drug-drug interactions. How to use them? Well, there's the different routes. If you want long effects, well, you want to use oral ingestion. If you want faster effects for, say, acute migraine, what we're studying is vaporizing flower. And I recommend against using oils and waxes because there have been cases of lung injury with vaporizing them. Another route is under the tongue, sublingual treatments, that those can also be very fast acting and may have potential for acute migraine treatment.
Well, we often talk about how migraine is a variable disease on a continuum. Some people get one attack a year, and some people are constant in chronic migraine. There's so much variation in our community. No one thing works for everyone, but I think there's some interesting potential with cannabis for migraine. So you don't yet have clear answers, and I am hopeful that you and your team are going to produce some really concrete answers in the research that you're doing. We can't wait to see the results. So keep at it.
Thank you so much. Great speaking with you today.